All right, good morning, men. Thank you for being here. I don't think I shared with you last week. I was when I was supposed to be finished preparing, probably showed up in the presentation. I was playing 100 holes of golf for charity, Pocket Testament League. Thank you, Rick Muma. Great ministry. See Rick if you'd like some more answers on that, or if you have money you don't know what to do with, he can find a good thing to do with that. So I woke up the next morning and was very tired. Popped 3 or 4 a leave, went to Starbucks to pick up the 10 gallons of coffee, and 5 minutes later dropped 2.5 gallons of that in the back of my car. Hot steaming coffee, it was great. So the car wash was glad to see me. And this morning, of course, at 6:15, they said, oh, was that this morning? So Brian Christie stuck around, and you can thank him for having brought the coffee this morning. Let's start with a word of prayer, please. Dear Heavenly Father, we just thank you so much for this time. We have busy schedules. We love our families. We love our work. And we love you. And we just pray that we can put aside some of those busy and urgent things and focus for the next 45 minutes to an hour on important things, and maybe even stick around for a few minutes afterwards, get to know a few guys that we haven't known before, and drink some of that coffee so I don't spill it on the way back. We ask all of this in your precious name this morning. Amen. A couple of quick housekeeping things. I went through some of those last week. It's a men's Bible study, not a lot of thought, a lot of preparation, and certainly not a lot of helpers and workers. There's no flowers on the tablecloths, as you might imagine. If you do want us to continue to communicate with you by email, because that's the easiest thing for us, there's a couple of cards on the table. Fill them out. Put men's email only if you want. We're not going to put you in a club. We're not going to make you like people that you don't want to like. Notes from last week. I do have some extras if you'd like those. They're also online. They're still trying to find the tape from last week, but I'm told that that will be online from last week and then probably every Monday afterwards. Please grab another cup of coffee. We already prayed about that, but there should be plenty. And do try to police after yourself and clean it up so that we don't have to stay here much longer rearranging the room. And then there are some guys, if you're really eager beavers, 7 o'clock isn't quite early enough for you. We've got some great godly men that are praying at 6 a.m. here, and then just kind of going through some of the needs that the community has. So I recommend doing that as well. I don't know about anybody else. It seemed like last week we covered a lot of material in a short period of time. Does it feel like that way to you? You might not have it all quite yet. I promised that we'd go through it a few times. We are going to be on the Abrahamic Covenant this morning, but just as a quick review, and I know there's a few faces here that weren't here last week. 10 weeks of study, we did the Old Testament overview, the whole Old Testament in 40 minutes last week. We are going to be on the Abrahamic Covenant and then the rest of the Old Testament. I'll do Mosaic, and then Scott Carpenter will come in finally to rescue you guys with some actual meat with the Davidic and the New Covenant. And we'll get into the New Testament, walk through Matthew, Acts, Epistles, Revelation, and then the review. Why are we here? Gain an understanding of history. We'll get some of that more this morning. Answer the questions, where did I come from? What am I doing here? Where am I going when I die? Gain an understanding of marriage from Scripture, interestingly enough, as well as the role of children, to find peace of mind, first of all, and to get to heaven. Just a quick word. I did have a few people ask me if I was going to start building a library, if I was actually going to read some of this Old Testament that you keep referring to. That is one of the goals, by the way. Some of these great books that, we've heard some of these stories in Sunday school. The Bible Knowledge Commentary, you can pick these up at the bookstore, Sunshine, or Mariner's got a great bookstore church over there. You can also go on Amazon. They've got new, used, $25 for, you know, $25 for a set. They have an Old Testament and New Testament. But Walvoord is one of the John Walvoord is one of the greatest guys, and this is a bunch of the Dallas Seminary faculty that have gone through this. And basically, the commentary takes the Bible verse by verse all the way through, so you can flip to it. If you want to know what this means in this part of the passage that you're reading, you simply go to the commentary, and it's their commentary on the basics, what's going on, what was the context, what was going on historically. So I highly recommend it for your library. Just a quick reminder, here's where we were. Most people don't know that the Old Testament is two-thirds to three-quarters of the Bible. The New Testament is down here. It's not in chronological order. That's part of what we're doing here, is to try to put it into some sort of historical context and some practical context, since it's a men's Bible study. And so we're spending a lot of time here on the history part, so that you can then bring in and you know where the prophets go and all these the stiff part of the Bible for a lot of us guys, which is the poetry. The guy's lamenting and woe is me and I wish things were better. It's the parts that we turn to once in a while when things are not going well, but it's the parts that we hope in the next couple of weeks you have some context. It's important to know when somebody's lamenting or when somebody's praying or when somebody is in a dungeon. Are they in a dungeon because of something they did, or is it because of something somebody else did? Is it because they're being righteous or because they were a bad citizen? And so that's what's going on with regard to the Bible bookcase. And you can, if you wanted to, I put a copy of this in your notes this week. You can go back through the notes last week, and hopefully you can cross off every one of the books, because we did touch on where they go. We won't necessarily go through all of them again this week. So let's get started. What I was thinking is, could we possibly go any faster through the Old Testament than we did last week? And the answer, of course, is, yeah, I think so. So we want to go through it a little bit, and for those of you that are visual, I'm gonna physically create the walkthrough. So in the Genesis, you know, books 1 through 11, you have the creation, the fall, and the flood. The flood basically starts the new Garden of Eden. He finds the righteous man Noah, and Noah and his sons, Japheth, Ham, and Shem. Shem's descendants then are, of course, the three stooges. No, they're not. The salvation through the Shemites. And then we pick up our story with Salt, Sarah, Abram, who's later renamed Abraham in the 17th chapter, Lot and Terah travel to Haran. And Terah is Abram's father, Lot's the nephew. They travel to the city of Haran, which is north, and then Abraham in the year 2000 around that, he gets the Abrahamic covenant, the first of the four covenants that we're following through to hang the Bible together. The Abrahamic covenant, which we will cover mostly this morning, is the land, spiritual blessing, and descendants. He has two sons, Ishmael, with his maid, basically, and Isaac, who is a son of promise. Isaac has two sons, Esau and Jacob, who is the son of promise. And then Jacob has 12 sons. They arrive in Egypt with a family of 70. Jacob then adopts Joseph's sons, Manasseh, Ephraim. So they grow from 72, a family of 72, basically, to 2.5 million over the next 400 years. Got that? So if we were to start down here, the Ur of the Chaldees, which is where we pick up our story with Abraham. Abrahamic covenant, I'm going to make you, I'm going to give you many children, I'm going to bless you, and I'm going, and so they start off on this trek through the Fertile Crescent up to Haran, an actual city. So the four of them go up here, Salt, they go up here, Dad dies, so now it's Sal, S-A-L, Sarah, Lot, and Abraham, and then they move down to here, about 1900, and then they end up here in the near Jerusalem in the Holy Land. Abraham is now nearly 90 years old. He still doesn't have any children. He's still been faithful. He's been moving his family around, and he keeps saying, what nation? I can't even get started on all these promises, but at least I finally got to the promised land. God says, no, not quite yet. This is where Joseph, remember, many-coated, splendored, goes here. He's the second of the oldest sons. The oldest sons are jealous because Jacob, the father, has blessed him, said, you're my favorite son, and he's naive enough to go tell his brothers, isn't that great? Look at this great coat. He gets thrown into a pit by his brothers. Eventually, they feel guilty being thrown in a pit. We don't want to kill him. We'll just sell him off to the slave traders. So he ends up being sold and goes down to Egypt. Ends up becoming the favorite of Potiphar, ends up being in charge. He is the one that when there is a famine, the oldest sons go here to meet with the guy in charge of all the grain, happens to be the son that they, or the brother that they sold into slavery, and they all have a happy reunion. The family moves down here, and Jacob dies there. 400 years later, they move down, go across the Red Sea. Moses brings them across the Red Sea down to the Mount Sinai. This is where they get the Ten Commandments and the other 630 laws. From Mount Sinai, they are called to return to the promised land. Remember, land, spiritual blessings, and descendants. They're on their way back there, and they send the 12 spies out. And basically the spies go, no, we don't want to go there. Big guys, big giants. Remember that story? Don't want to go there. God says, you guys are chicken. You still don't have the faith. I'm going to make you wander around here in the desert for 40 years until the next generation proves that they're a little braver. So 40 years later, they move over here along the side. They're still not taking the giants on head on, but at least they've got the faith to come over here. They camp on this side. Look over, General Joshua looks over the, the Dead Sea, Sea of Galilee, and the Jordan River. Looks over the Jordan River, they go across, go to Jericho, trumpet blows, walls fall outward, they take Jericho, the city of Ai, spelled Ai, and then they move down. God tells them to take all of the land. They take most of the land, so they go down south, take a bunch of cities, go north, take a bunch of cities. They don't take all of it. Palestine's one of them. That came back to haunt them. The moral of the story is, do everything that God says, don't just do part of it. They stumble around here, they divide it up into 12 tribes, and eventually, because they have a number of kings, which is through kings and judges, they have guys that start out good, become bad. On the northern tribes, they get taken off into Assyria, into captivity. They take the best of the best, marry, and stumble around. This is about 700 B.C. The southern kingdom, they get taken off into Babylonia. I may have said that they got taken off into Egypt at one point. I was mistaken. This is where a number of the books are written, a lot of the prophets, because they are in captivity. That's what we were talking about earlier. It's important to know where they're writing from. They all end up coming back to the Holy Land, and that's where we pick up our story. Make sense? So Exodus, Leviticus, quick. So we've just kind of gone through that. So we've gone from Ur of the Chaldees up to Haran, over to the Promised Land here. And so now you've got Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, about 1,500, Moses and Aaron. We've talked about the 72 growing to 2.5 million. They're rescued from Egypt. That's where the Mosaic Covenant is given. We'll talk about the Mosaic Covenant and the Mount Sinai more next week. Joshua is the retaking of Israel, Judges and Ruth living under foreign oppression in Israel. 1 and 2 Samuel, beginning of the monarchy, the first king in the Promised Land. And then Psalms, about 1,000 B.C., the Davidic Covenant. Um, we talked about, this is just a picture, I think it's in your stuff here. Here you go, in Egypt again, across the Red or the Reed Sea, pyramids, after they built the pyramids, came down to Mount Sinai, came up to Kadesh Barnea, or Katie's Barn, if you want to remember it that way. They walked by Sodom and Gomorrah, which is right here by the Dead Sea, lowest place on the planet, where you can still see pillars of salt. They go up to Mount Nemo, a high place, look across over into Jericho, and then here's the Holy Land in here. So as we finish God and his story, 1 and 2 Kings and is really Solomon's death leads to the divided monarchy. We talked about the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, and this is where you get some of these great books in the Old Testament, because they are separated from their family and they are trying to reconnect with their family. We talked about the Trojans and the archers, fingers being cut off, being taken away. Yes, I know, Brian. I got them mixed up. The Trojans have no fingers after this week. Jeroboam, Solomon's servant, then Amos and Hosea. We talked about in this area here is when the northern kingdom was exiled to Assyria. They never returned. Rehoboam is the other son who and his descendants, Joel, Micah, Nahum. These are the books of the Bible. These are the prophets that are writing while they are in Babylon, exiled at 600 BC. This is a great chart that I found on the internet. I don't have the original, so you take a picture, copy it, blow it up, then try to make 100 copies of it, and it's barely readable, but I thought it was interesting enough and kind of reinforces some of the things that we're talking about. We've talked about, again, one last time, or Genesis 1 through 11, right here in Ur of the Chaldees, goes up the Fertile Crescent to Mesopotamia, which is Genesis 12, as you can see here. Then they come back down to the Promised Land in Israel, and right in here in the Holy Land, Genesis 12 through 38, Joshua's Judges, this is where all these books are written from or about. Then they come down to Egypt, which is the end of Genesis and the beginning of Exodus, where they go across the Red Sea, down to Mount Sinai, come up here, wander around, big giants, and then across, and then back into the Promised Land, where once again, they don't follow the major commandment, which is, trust me, follow me, good things happen. They can't follow 630 laws either, so they get put into captivity, they go off into Assyria, the northern tribe, and the southern tribe goes over here to Babylonia. Got it? And then, of course, with the New Testament, you can see where some of those books are written, and that's where the rest of these things are. So that's in your deck. And then just finishing up on that quick walk through the Old Testament, as a reminder, Ezra and Nehemiah, return of the exiles from Judah. So now we've got the southern kingdom being, coming back to the Holy Land, and then you've got Daniel, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, which is a rehash, and then the second temple, and then, as you guys know, there is 400 years of silence. So from 400 BC to Christ's birth, we really don't have much recorded, okay? Another way of looking at those dates, important empires, Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece, Rome. Interesting that we just don't hear much about the Assyrians, Babylonians these days, and yet they were the big powerhouses of the day. We do still keep hearing about the nation of Israel, interestingly enough, started out as 72 people. There may be something to these everlasting promises after all. Okay, so the Abrahamic covenant, we've referred to it. Let's go back to Ur of the Chaldees. Abraham, who's about 80 years old, and his wife Sarah, he's still called Abram, she's still called Sarai. And God gives him in a vision, says, I will give you this land forever, as far as your eye can see. Abraham goes, good, no problem so far. I will give you spiritual blessings. I will deliver all these blessings through you and yours. I like the blessings part, don't know who yours is. God promises to make all of the families of the earth to be blessed through Abraham's seed. still a little bit nervous, don't have any seed. And then the third part of this is descendants. I will make you a great nation. God promises to make Abraham's seed a great nation. And let's go through the story now. So God's promise, as we get into that, is important to note right here at the beginning. And we'll go through the Bible this morning and look at the differences in the four covenants. The Abrahamic covenant is an LUE. It's a literal covenant to be taken as actual and factual. You'll be blessed is not a figure of speech. They, in the Old Testament, they really are blessed. If you do good, you will be blessed. You really will be more rich. You really will have better crops. You really will have more things to show for your efforts. That's not necessarily true today, but that would be the Old Testament part of the Bible that a lot of the preachers on television would preach to. It's important to know that so that when you're talking to non-believers or you're talking to people that are really struggling to understand, then they say, yeah, but he says if I send $500, I'll get $2,000 back. And here's where he points to in the Bible. Yes, but let me put it into context for you. Anyway, unconditional covenant. God fulfills his promise regardless of our actions. We don't and can't do enough to deserve. The Abrahamic covenant is God's promise to us, period. We don't have to do anything. We certainly don't deserve it. And then it's an eternal covenant. It lasts forever. It won't be taken away, but we can't tell God the timing. God has an eternal perspective, and this is what gets us mere mortals in trouble over and over again, as we'll see. Okay, so let's open our Bibles if we have them. And I'll read enough of it if you don't. Starting with verse 1. The Lord had said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. So Abram left, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran, and he took his wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran. And they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moriah at Shechem. And at the time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So he built an altar to the Lord, who had appeared to him. From there he went on toward the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai, how do you spell Ai, on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Then Abram set out and continued toward the Negev, which is the desert right down below. So as we go through this real quickly then, I will make you, in verse 2, I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. That's the descendants part. Verse 3, I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. Those are the blessings. So we've got descendants and blessings. And notice here that it says, I will bless those who bless you, and I will what? Curse those that curse you. Remember, this is literal, so these are very serious, very literal things to do. And then the last one over here in verse 7, I guess it is, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. This is really the heart of the Abrahamic covenant right here, okay? Descendants, blessings, and land. And of course, the important part about this week, especially getting into the word, is that we can tell you all kinds of stories, and Brian and Dave and I will be up here and we'll be stringing this whole thing together, our version of history. But it's really important that you know where it's coming from, and you can wire it together, and you can look at your own translations. And obviously, we hope that you'll get into the Bible, and this will make it more interesting. Just great stories, great stories. And of course, having just been to Israel with my wife and a few others, it's amazing and embarrassing how well everybody there, Christian and non-Christian, knows our Old Testament. They know our Bible better than we do, and it's very humbling. Well, this is the door where Rebecca, remember Rebecca in the book? Blank stares. Okay, then if flip right over to Genesis 13. In verse 14, God focuses on the land again. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, lift up your eyes from where you are. Remember, we've moved down to that holy land, and we're going to look north and south, east and west. All the land that you see, I will give you and your offspring forever. Kind of like like what we imagine the old cowboys. They stand up on a hill, and the guy just says, okay, I'll just take all of the land that I can see. How big's your ranch? Pretty much everything. Great. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth. That's a lot. So that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you. Quite a promise to a 75-year-old guy who's never had any children, and his wife is getting a little bit past the prime of her life. So Abraham did exactly what all of us would do in faith. He moved his tents and went to live near the great trees of Mamre at Hebron, where he built an altar to the Lord. Abraham says, goodbye me. You want me to move again? No problem. Now, remember, he's out there. He's, he's telling everybody. He's not silent about this thing. And he's a rich guy because he's following the Lord and he's being blessed. He's already being blessed by the Abrahamic covenant. So he's already in little Bible studies and he's out, having coffee at Pandamon saying, hey, LSD, land, spiritual blessings, and descendants from me, Abraham. Everybody's going, yeah. And then 5 years later, still through me. I'm living in faith, and they're going, yeah, not seeing that happening yet. This is really the grant deed for the nation of Israel. So all of these other blessings, but I mean, this is, you guys are renting here, I own it. This is really going on. This is a big difference. So then we get into Genesis 15, and this is where things really heat up. This is pretty fun, and the application is one that we all can relate to right away. So starting with, we'll just read a big section here. God's covenant with Abraham, chapter 15 of Genesis. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I don't know about you, but every time I hear God or an angel start out with, do not be afraid, I take a step back. You flinch. Do not be afraid, Abram. Remember, he hasn't had his name changed yet. I am your shield, your very great reward. But Abram said, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus, which is one of his servants. Basically, he's going, hey, we got a problem. We're beginning to have a problem here. I'm getting a little bit embarrassed. I've been telling guys down at the coffee shop for years that I'm going to have lots of descendants. Now I'm 90 years old, and nothing's changed. He says if things don't happen pretty quick, the only guy in my house that's going to get all my stuff is my servant Eliezer. And Abram said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him. This man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. So God said, well, this isn't working with this dust. If you can't get your head around how much dust there is in Israel, by the way, there's a lot of dust in Israel, then look up at the stars. There's a lot of stars up there. So Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. He keeps being faithful. He's questioning. So here's my summary of what we're talking about. God says, do not be afraid. After Abram ducks, he says, come on, let's get real. What am I going to do? I don't have any kids. This isn't getting any better. We have a problem. You've given me promises, but no children. So Abram gives God a plan. And God said, no, that's not going to be the plan. It's actually going to be your child. Well, okay, I am the Lord. And then God's contract in verse 9. So the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. Abram brought all these to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut in half. So on it goes, you can read it. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. You can read the story, but you'll remember, perhaps, this, and this is where this story, one of these miscellaneous stories, can kind of fit into the history. So if you're a lawyer, this is the way that they were doing it. They didn't have a lot of word processors, and they didn't have a lot of $400 an hour guys, so they basically cut a heifer in half, and then the two people that agreed to a contract would stroll arm in arm through this with witnesses, basically signifying that if we don't keep our vows, our promises to each other, it's as if these two parts of the heifer will stay apart forever. The opposite of that, of course, would be we intend to keep this together just as if the two just as these two parts of the heifer should stay together. Okay? So that's how it would normally work. That's how the contract was signified. And in this particular case, though, he puts him into a sleep. And so in this dream, this is what you would expect. This is how you would expect the story to go. But in the dream, God alone walks through as, again, the story of lawyers. This is a unilateral contract, not a bilateral contract. There's no promise. There's no expectation on our part from God. God walks through this by himself. And then I think this, and then in verse 18, so you have the picture of this part of the contract, right? So then in verse 18, here's an interesting thing that we can come back to if you want later. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, to your descendants I give this land. So he keeps talking about these descendants. From the river of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates, the land of the Kenites, Kenizzites, and all that. Now, we just looked at a map. Now, look at over here. Remember, we've done this, you know, we've gone from here all the way up here, all the way down here. This family knows their geography. This is only a few hundred miles in here, by the way. But this Egypt border from here, let's even call it here. So the promised land is, what does it say? From the border of Egypt to where? Euphrates. It's not this little piece right in here that's the promised land. As I read it, it's this whole area. Okay? So obviously over the last 3,000 years or so, things have been chipped away, and now all the battles, if you just put it into today's context, now the chosen nation of Israel, the Jewish nation, has given in, has been beaten back, they've outlasted the Babylonians and the Assyrians, but they're still battling Iraq and Iran and Jordan. They keep getting Scud missiles, and they keep giving in, and politically incorrect, perhaps. When you read the Bible and you're a Christian, and you seems to me that they've given about as much as they possibly could, when you start out with the Jewish nation having been promised all of this. And so I think that they have compromised and they've turned the other cheek about as much as they can. Anyway, so going on. Genesis 16. Let's keep moving forward. We've got lots to do. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So here's where we are in the story. Abram helps God anyway. God has already said, no, I don't need your help. You're going to have children. So the first plan was, well, maybe it should just be intellectually to a guy in my family who's my servant. And God said, no, it's going to be yours. So Abram says, God, I think you need some help. You know, I'm believing in the LSD, but maybe what you actually mean is I'm going to have the children and Sarah's out of the picture. So he takes Hagar, which is his wife's maidservant, much younger, much prettier, I'm assuming, makes the story go better anyway. And so he takes Hagar as his wife, and they have Ishmael, son of Abram and Hagar. So Abram, he puffs up a little bit, goes down to the coffee shop and said, I told you it wasn't me. It was Sarah. I had a son, Ishmael, who becomes the father of the 12 Arab nations. And then look in verse 12. What happens when we give God choices? Starting in verse 11, the angel of the Lord also said to her, you are now with child, and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. Some translations are literally, he will be an ass. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers. The important thing before we go any further on what that means today is that in their culture, this notion of Hagar taking on a second wife, his wife being a part of the plan, you need more sons to help you in the fields, you need more sons for your heirs. The point of this isn't to be immoral, which is how we would read this. The point is that they're not trusting God completely. They're kind of trusting God. They're trusting God more than we would, but they're not really trusting him completely. They're giving God options. And you've seen this chart before. It's in your pack. Remember, here's the line of Abraham. Here's the promises. He's believing most of this, but then right at the top here, Hagar says, oh, I've got a handmaiden. So here's Ishmael, who is not of this chosen LSD. He's the father of the Arabs, okay? And we're told that throughout eternity, Ishmael will be an ass, he will be angry, and he will make it his and his descendants' life's mission to kill all of his brothers on the Abrahamic side that he doesn't have yet. Sound familiar? Does this sound like this is going to go away anytime soon? Does it put into perspective when all these Arab nations say, well, it's the same God, we've got well-meaning people that are saying, it's the same God, it's okay. We're just talking minor differences. No, it's not. It's not minor differences. So I just throw that out as perspective. Genesis 17, moving on. Now, when Abram was 99 years old, not quite 100, 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, I am God Almighty, walk before me and be blameless. I will confirm my covenant between me and you and will greatly increase your numbers. Now, if you just pick up the book of Genesis and you start here, you don't know what the covenant is. You don't know how important it is. You don't know how long he's waited. He's waited 30 years for this since he was 75 years old. Now he's 100 years old. He's already had a son, Ishmael, and God said, nah, it's not the right one. In fact, he's a donkey's ass, and he's going to hate everybody that he comes in contact with and try to kill him and all his descendants. But look at here in verse 3. Abram fell face down, and God said to him, as for me, this is my covenant with you. You'll be the father of many nations. No longer will you be called Abram. Now your name will be Abraham. For I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you very fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings will come from you. I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant. Remember the everlasting part, and between me and your descendants after you, for the generations to come, and your God. And your God of your sons after you, the whole land of Canaan, where you are now an alien, I will give as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants. And then you can read the rest of the story. As for you, you must keep my covenant. And they go on, and they do circumcision as a sign of that promise. Move on with that, since it's a men's study, and that just sounds horrible. So Genesis 21, 1 and 2, God keeps his promise. Isaac is born to Sarah, as was promised 30 years before. The promises are always, God always keeps his promises. We just don't know the timing. Our job is to keep doing the right thing over and over and over again. It's the only thing we can control. The timing will eventually run over our good actions, okay? So God keeps his promise. Abraham circumcised Isaac by faith in God's promise as a signature of that, okay? Then we flip over to chapter 22 very quickly. You saw the birth of Isaac in chapter 21, chapter 22, Abraham is tested. So remember the context here, 30 years we've been waiting. No, it's not Ishmael, it's Isaac. I mean, this guy is the first helicopter parent from Newport Beach that you've ever seen in your life. This guy's got him on his shoulders. He never lets him go. He's teaching him how to kick a soccer ball. He's taking him to all the little league meetings when he's 2 years old. He's buying him mitts. He's taking him to Indian guides way before he's ready. This is the proudest father ever. Isn't he cute? And then God said in chapter 22, sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham, here I am. Then God said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and who I have promised will become the father of all the nations, and take him to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about. Huh? What would we do? God, I think you need to go back and read the story. This is going to be the father of the nations. He doesn't do that. You don't need to turn there. I will. 2 Chronicles 3:1. Then Solomon began to build the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where the Lord had appeared to his father David. It was on the threshing floor of Ener the Jebusite, the place provided by David. He began building on the second day of the second month in the fourth year of his reign. So Moriah is where Solomon built the temple, where they eventually have is the most holy place, and we have the Rock of the Dome now. Okay, so that's where Mount Moriah is the place of Solomon's temple, Dome of the Rock. Abraham no longer doubts God. God's plan is shown by the sacrifice offering of Isaac and provision of the lamb. You remember the story. Isaac is 14. We don't really know what's in the story, he says, hey, come on, Isaac, we're going to go up to Mount Moriah and we're going to do a sacrifice. I said, okay. They're you know, halfway up there. This is great. I see all the wood and everything, but I don't see what we're going to sacrifice. God will provide it. Okay. And then we don't know whether they scuffle or Isaac is this perfect son. And he says, well, okay, you're the sacrifice. Why don't you get up there? Well, okay. I can see that happening with my son. So he jumps up on the altar, and as he is about ready to kill him, God and the angels say, no, don't do that. We believe you. You finally believe us. They provide the perfect sacrifice. Isaac climbs down. They put the perfect sacrifice up, and that is the first time we see the substitution, right? We should be dying, but instead he takes the sacrifice. So in chapter 28, moving rapidly, then we come to verse 13. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. He keeps saying that. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. He keeps saying that. And you will spread out to the west and the east, to the north and the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I'm with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. And then in Jeremiah, it's repeated. Ezekiel, the hope of the land is repeated. And then again, you don't need to turn to it. In Galatians 31:1-13, O you foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? New Testament. Before your very eyes, Jesus Christ was clearly portrayed as crucified. I would like to learn just one thing from you. Did you receive the Spirit by observing the law, the 630 laws plus the 10 commandments, or by believing what you heard? Are you so foolish after beginning with the Spirit? Are you now trying to attain your goal by human effort? Have you suffered so much for nothing if it really was for nothing? Does God give you his Spirit and work miracles among you because you observe the law or because you believe what you heard? In the New Testament, consider Abraham. He believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Understand then that those who believe are children of Abraham. The Scripture foresaw that God would justify the Gentiles by faith and announce the gospel in advance to Abraham. All nations will be blessed through you. So those who have faith are blessed along with Abraham, the man of faith. So here we are in the New Testament. Doesn't this make more sense now? Isn't this much more powerful? He's referring back to and saying, remember Abraham. The people that he's talking to certainly did. They lived this for years and years. These are the stories that they passed down. Abraham believed. Was he perfect? No. Did he try to give God choices? Absolutely. Did the choices work out? Usually not. Could he have a son without Sarah? Yes. But that wasn't the promise. Okay? So this is what we're trying to do. This is the perspective that we're trying to go through. This is the Dome of the Rock. This is where the temple was built by Solomon. This is where the first substitution was made. This is now this is now controlled by the sons of Ishmael. There is now over the door in Sanskrit that we can't read, and it says, "Our God has no sons." Does this sound like a brother who's trying to get together with his brothers? I don't think so. Does it sound like they're going to come to any peace accord very soon? I don't think so. The world according to Phil Langford. This has been going on forever. It's been foretold and it's been prophesied that these brothers will war forever. Ishmael's side says, we want to kill them. Our side says, turn the other cheek. Who do you think is going to win that one? The contrast between the covenants, Abraham covenant is unconditional. God will do it. The Mosaic covenant, which we'll cover more next week, is conditional. If you obey me, you can dwell in and enjoy the Holy Spirit. Israel was scattered because they were disobedient. Will they become obedient again? Yes. How do we know that? Because God said so. The promise to Israel, when they accept the Messiah, they will again have their land. They have a piece of it. Do they control it? No. Will they? Yes. Will they enjoy the blessings of the Abrahamic covenant and the Mosaic covenants? Yes. Why? Because God said so, and we've seen that he keeps his promises. We just don't know when. The great plan. Jesus Christ would substitute his blood to save people throughout history. It was done with Isaac and as his son, and it's continued to be done. It was demonstrated again by Jesus Christ. This is a lot of Ishmael, and it's growing. I think this is in your deck last week, the 12 tribes. Remember, they 12 tribes, and then here's where they went up here. And Bethlehem and Jerusalem is right in here, okay? So you can see where all this is, and then here is Philistine and all that, okay? So we've got a few minutes. We're going to go into discussion if you would like. Most important, introduce yourself to the guys around the table. Get to know them a little bit. The youngest guy at the table is the discussion group leader. Why? Because I said so. Why don't we trust God's promises? Why do we give God choices? Will there ever be peace in Israel? And the extra credit bonus time is who's got the biggest hangover, Carol or Sosha? Go, we've got 10 minutes. All right, well, it's 8 o'clock, and since it's a men's Bible study, I want to make sure that we fulfill the promise that we made that we'd get you out of here. You're welcome to stay as long as you like. Our prayer is that the clubhouse is open for as long as you'd like. Brian's pointing. If you would like to, coffee costs us about $1 a cup over at Starbucks. Contribute, figure it out. Throw a $5 in there once a month or something like that. If you're going to be here, couple of quick things here. Appreciate the. I was walking around a little bit. The discussion is wonderful. Please stay and do that. We'll run highlights from football on the scoreboard here, beginning at 8:15. You're welcome to stick around if you'd like till then. I was asked. I do have some old notes or I have some notes from last week. There's a couple of other charts. There's a couple of other maps that we went through, and there are extra copies back on the, as it were, the offerings boxes, I guess, there. So pick that up, or you can go online anytime. Any other announcements or anything else that I should be taking care of with regard to this? Just a reminder, we've gone through the Old Testament, Abrahamic covenant. Oh, next week is the Mosaic covenant. There are two really exciting things about this. The first and the most important is the last time I'm going to be speaking, and you have to put up with my nonsense. We'll actually get into some real meat when Scott Carpenter comes up and to begin the Davidic covenant. But I don't know how. And of course, they gave me these first three because they were the big picture overall stuff, and they said, who could screw up Abraham and Moses' life? I said, I could, and they go, okay, you're in. So that's what's going on there, and then through Revelation and the review and the summary. By the time we get down to the epistles and Revelation and putting all this together with all the history, it's just it's pretty powerful. We appreciate you being here. Let me close in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for these men. Thank you for this time. We thank you for the effort that Mark Page and the elders of Grace have given to us so that we can have this clubhouse to be open and available and ready for us to come in and do this study. Help us to go be great, powerful tigers for Christ in our workplaces and in our homes today. And we ask you to bring us back again next week safely in your precious name. Amen. Thank you for being here, men. Stay as long as you want. Have another cup of coffee so I don't have to spill it in my car.